the AM and FM 107 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur, because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. I hope you're having a great day out there riding the roller coaster life of being an entrepreneur. I hope it's mostly uphill and not down too many steep valleys, and certainly no twists and turns and loops. Just keep riding up on that chain lift and you will get there eventually. That's right. The number one thing that entrepreneurs share: commitment, perseverance, the ability and the desire and actually achieving constant long-term hard work. We have a great show for you today. First up, Jacob Zacks has solved a problem. Again, I didn't know that it existed. Your credit cards give you bonuses, right? Points on airlines and all of that thing, 3% off, cash back, all of that. He has invented a car credit card where all of your automobile expenses go to benefits, and it is incredible. It's a great idea, a great product. And again, he saw something that none of the rest of us did and now is reaping the reward. It is probably the credit card that you are going to want to get if you have an automobile, especially with a lease or a mortgage or a monthly payment or anything. Great, great story. Then after that, Michael Houlihan is with us. He is one of our favorite long-term guests. He founded with his wife Barefoot Wine and built that into America's largest wine manufacturing company. Amazing story where the logo, the Barefoot, came from. We're going to talk about all of it, how they sold it, how they got their first bottle into a store. Michael and I talk about all of it, and it is fascinating. And so I'm excited for you to hear from him. Also, I wanted to toot my own horn and the group of people that are helping here at the show. The new book that we are working on, The Real Environmentalist, is already number one in one of its categories. It got a new release. Thank you so much. A number one new release in one of its categories is how Amazon plays it. So we can now claim that it was a number one book, even though it's not out for another month yet. Please, well, at the end of this month, 27 days, please go and get a copy of The Real Environmentalist. It is an incredibly upmoving, happy story that I believe shows that the world is not going to end in some sort of environmental disaster. We may all get nuked or something. We all may get EMP'd, but I don't think the environment is something we need to worry about right now, because entrepreneurs are out there solving the problems. And that's what the book is about. Please go get a copy. It would mean a lot to all of us. Anyway, great show. We're going to get started in just a second.
I think it's a great question.
It's great, great question.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Okay, that's a great question. And
yeah, it's a great question. And
those are two great examples. Great, Jim.
Jim, I think that's absolutely perfect. That is exactly it.
School for Startups Radio.
We are back, and again, thank you so very much for being with us today. Wouldn't it be cool if owning a car came with cool advantages? Well, it does. I'm excited to introduce that idea to you. I've never seen this before. It's going to be really cool. Please welcome to the show Jacob Zacks. He is the CEO and founder of Fasten Rewards. They are a credit card designed to reward people for using their car via their loan, their lease payment, whatever. He will explain it. Jacob has a very interesting career in entrepreneurship. He started off working actually in politics, and he was one of the very first employees at Nucella, which was a unicorn. I think he was employee 12 or something like that. After that, he did a couple of other jobs, companies that he was working with, sometimes the co-founder, and recently started Fasten about 2 years ago. Jacob, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jim. I lost you for a second there, so I hope you didn't hear me seeing where you were.
No, I was just making fun of you and introducing you a little bit. So welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am well. So let's start off with Fasten. Tell us how it works.
Yeah. So we, as far as I know, are the only credit card that rewards consumers on their auto loans and leases. It is the second largest form of recurring non-discretionary spend in the American household. And, you know, everyone has an auto loan, everyone has a lease, and now you can get 2 points per dollar on your auto loan and lease. And so start getting rewarded for driving. And then beyond just the loan and lease, we also give bonus points for all of your auto spend. So parking, gas, insurance, tolls, maintenance, car washes, all of the stuff that you need to keep your car up and running, we'll get bonus points for that. And then, you know, points everywhere else. So, you know, we'll get points for Starbucks, gas, Netflix. We're a Visa card, so we're accepted everywhere. Visa's accepted, which is basically everywhere.
Okay. Why is the loan or the lease factored into it? What if I just own the car?
So, yeah. So if you do own the car, we'll still give you bonus points for all of your auto spend. But, you know, what it comes down to is there's $1.6 trillion, that's trillion with a T, dollars of auto loans, you know, being spent in America annually. None of that is rewarded until today. Well, when we launched a few months ago. So, you know, people are spending this money and they might as well be getting their points, right? Auto loans have gone up even before tariffs hit, and gone up 30% since 2020. And, you know, we are all understanding and all feeling the effects of tariffs as well. And so prices have gone up beyond that. And then even with the, all the tangential stuff has gone up as well. Insurance has gone up. In certain states, the average insurance policy is over $4,000 a year. And so we'll go ahead and give bonus points on all the insurance and all the tangential stuff you have with your car as well. So this isn't only for, you know, the auto enthusiast. If you're just driving yourself to work and your kids to school, you're spending the money anyway. And then beyond that, it's also how you redeem the points, which I'm excited to talk about too.
Well, go ahead and talk about it.
Great. I'll talk about it right now. So you can redeem the points for traditional credit card stuff like hotel and travel, but you can also redeem at your dealership group. So if you have a group that, you know, has multiple stores and last time, now you have a Ford, but next time you want a Toyota, you can redeem for your next down payment, for service, for maintenance, for all of that. If you want a Jeep jacket at your dealership, you can go and redeem there. And so it's also meant to get people coming back to their dealerships. And what it comes down to is, you know, to get your brakes changed could be $1,200, right? That's a real expense for a lot of people. And so we want to make sure that we are bringing down the cost of car ownership and making sure that we can, you know, with the Fasten card, you can go on your dream vacation, buy your dream car, or just take care of the regular and routine maintenance that you're going to have to do, you know, once, twice a year.
Okay. Sounds like a great idea. I love it. I don't want to talk about your competitors or anything, but for example, there's the Capital One card that talks about rewards, right? Does that card, if I pay my mortgage, not my car loan on that card, do I get bonus points or anything? Are you the first one to tie the points to the automobile?
Yeah, as far as I know, we are the only credit card that gives you points on your auto loans and leases. So you are spending the money anyway, you might as well get the points, but there are a lot of rewards pros out there, but I think we are the only ones doing what we're doing.
Okay, cool. Have you ever heard of a company called Discovery Health out of South Africa?
No, I haven't. And I actually lived in South Africa for a few years. So, you know, I haven't heard of them. Who are they?
I assume that they still exist. It's a medical insurance company that gives you rewards every time you go to the gym. And when you buy sneakers to go running, it gives you points. And it sounds like the same thing. You know, they have a healthcare niche, and if you get 1,000 points, they'll send you on a vacation or something like that. It sounds
Like, so it's a similar. Oh, sorry. Idea. Yeah, continue. Yeah, so exactly, right? That's what we're looking for, right? What it comes down to is this is driving in America. You know, everyone drives in this country, you know, most people drive every single day, right? And so you are going to be, so you are going to have your car, you're going to have your maintenance. You are never on your last car either, right? Until the end. And so we want to make sure that you now are earning points that you can use towards your next vehicle, but for doing things that you are going to be doing daily, right? I don't remember the last day I didn't hop in my car. I highly doubt other people can remember that as well. And so we really want to be rewarding people for the things they're doing daily and making sure that they're getting rewarded for all of that, for all of the spend they're going to have with their routine car maintenance. And so, you know, this is meant to be a broad product that's meant for really consumers who have an auto loan and lease. And even if you don't, and you say you have a 15-year-old or you're thinking about your next car, you can now start accruing points towards your next vehicle. And so even if you don't have that loan or lease, we can get you going with rewards for all of your other auto spend and all of your other spend as well.
All right. How big is the definition of auto spend?
Car washed. Yeah. So auto spend broadly is actually 5% of US GDP. So, yeah. And so if you get your car washed, parking, gas, insurance, tolls, the only thing we don't do is tickets. And so, you know, as long as you're being a safe driver, we'll get you there. But yeah, really anything related to your auto spend that you can think of. And frankly, if we don't have something there, you can reach out to us. You can get to our website at fastandcard.com and reach out to us or even find me on LinkedIn. And, you know, we're always happy to add other auto related products as well. Because we want to make sure that this is really all encompassing for as many people as we can make it all encompassing for.
All right. I love it. Makes a ton of sense.
And yeah, thank you.
So go back in time and tell us the entrepreneurial story. How did you get the idea? What'd you do first? Did you go raise money?
Yeah.
Talk like a history teacher.
Yeah, great question. So I've always been in early stage tech. Really, since my first job out of college, I've been in some companies that have done really well, other companies that, you know, that haven't done as great, but you know, frankly, you learn a lot from all of them. And so my last company I was in was a payment processor. I was the second employee there. And then I got married, my wife got pregnant, we were living in New York, and I moved from New York City to the suburbs, and I didn't have a car, and I bought a car, and I was like, hey, why am I getting rewarded for everything under the sun except for my auto loan, right? And so now there are credit cards that will reward you for, you know, travel, hotel, your rent. There are cards that are coming out for, you know, other things as well. And so I was like, hey, this is a huge pain point for a lot of consumers. And I started to really do research. I already had that payments experience. And we had come, and I realized that, you know, since inflation hit, even before tariffs, the price of a vehicle had gone up 30%. And so it's really hitting the American public's pocket. And the cost of ownership used to be 9% for the American household, and it's jumped to 14%, according to a stat that just came out from the Car Dealership Guide. And I realized that this is just increasing expense for households. So why not go in and get people rewarded for the things they are going to do anyway? And what it comes down to on our end is you're driving yourself to work and your kids to school, and you might as well get rewarded for it. Or if you're taking long road trips, you might as well get rewarded for it. You know, get rewarded for the things people are doing every day and really kind of help their bottom line and use those points for your next car or your next vacation.
All right. So you had the idea. What'd you do then? Did you ask your wife for permission?
Yeah, you know, actually, it's a very funny story. My wife was 3 months pregnant. I looked at her with our first child. I looked at her and I said, hey, I think I want to start a company. And she, you know, being the lovely and supportive person, she said, you know, you're crazier than I thought, but let's go and let's do it. So, you know, I kind of say I have now I have a 60-month-old and a newer product that just launched a few months ago. So I kind of have two babies at once and still a very, very supportive wife, which is, you know, kind of the best thing I could ask for. And we've been really just going and expanding, right? You know, when we're all hearing about, you know, what it comes down to is when everyone has these, everyone's getting a new car and car prices are, you know, really top of the zeitgeist as our prices for everything. So we really want to make sure people are getting rewarded for all of that.
All right. So your wife gives permission. What do you do then? What are the steps you start taking? Did you hire a programmer? What happened?
Yeah. So that's a really good question. So I went and I hired, I spoke to this guy, you know, who's been an incredible mentor and partner. His name is Matthew Goldman. He runs a blog called Cards for the Win. He is a credit card product expert. And I was like, hey, let's grab some lunch. I sat down, I went, I had this idea, and he was like, it makes sense to me. Matthew's a credit card and an auto enthusiast. And so we went in and we spoke to a million different processors and program managers and all of the networks, you know, Visa, MasterCard, Amex, Discover. And then we decided on our processor, who is our processor, Spino, who's been an incredible partner. And then we had to get our issuing bank, which was Celtic. And then, you know, to launch a card can take a while, right? So it's a financial services product. So there's a lot of regulations and there's a lot of regulatory hurdles we have to jump and a lot of compliance. So it's not like a company, you know, that you can just go and build with AI and spin up in a few months, right? It takes about a year and a half. Things have to get bank approval. All of these things have to happen to get it launched. And then about a year and a half after that, you know, we launched the card. And then we also signed up a bunch of dealers. So a lot of our distribution is through dealerships as well. And so, you know, we want to make sure people are going back to their dealership for that service, their maintenance, their next down payment. So we also go and we partner with dealers on the card distribution side. And, you know, dealers are really looking for ways to make sure people come back to that service. There's a stat that 75% of people who come back to their dealership for service and maintenance will come back to their next car. If you're going to, you know, Jiffy Lubes or mom and pop places for service and maintenance, that number drops down to 35%. So our goal is to also help the dealers retain their customers for the service and maintenance as well. So I went out and I spoke to, you know, I think about there are 16,000 franchise dealerships in America. I spoke to maybe about, you know, 15,999 of them and just got a bunch of feedback and then spoke to cardholders. And I was like, hey, is this something that you would go and sign up for? We did some market surveys. And what it came down to is that, you know, people who said that they have an auto loan, what 92% of them said they were somewhat or very likely to sign up for this card when we went and did surveys. And so we went out there and got a wait list and got people really up and running with the card and with the product and made sure that we had a good and strong launch. And, you know, now we're going and expanding our dealer partners and expanding our number of cards that are expanding our cardholder base and really bringing value to our dealers, partners, and our consumers and our cardholders.
All right. I love the dealer angle. How many of those are signed up now? Do you have 1,000?
So we have around 60 dealers signed up right now. And, okay. You know, frankly, we actually have a lot of demand. But, you know, like any product, you know, there are always going to be a few things at launch that you have to work on. And so as we go and as we say this, like right now we are in the mode of like making sure we are operationally efficient. And then we're going to go out and raise the, prove that operational efficiency. And then we want to go out and raise, Series A, probably sometime next year. Once we really kind of have that whole process up and running and humming and our goal, right now everything's running smoothly, but, you know, we want to go and A/B test a few things and then really go and expand. But I would say the inbound has been incredible from dealers, and dealers are really always trying to find ways to differentiate themselves. And this is a real way for dealers to differentiate themselves by offering it. You know, now like we have an ROI calculator coming out soon. And so, with that ROI calculator, the whole thing is, you know, a dealer, they're selling similar products. Now they can say, hey, with the Fasten card, we can help lower the cost of your vehicle by 6, 7, 8, 9% over the lifetime of your loan, which is savings in the people's pocket. And then also, you know, it's in the form of points too. So those points can be redeemed for, you know, for travel, but now they can also be redeemed at the group. And the whole key is to make that a really good flywheel for the dealership and increase the loyalty, but also giving the our cardholders options, options in how they redeem. You know, we don't want to pigeonhole anyone. We want to have a good broad rewards program for people to use. But I definitely think a lot of people will be coming back to the dealership, you know, for their next vehicle and for service they may not have before.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I think they will. So you have like the, it's funny, you're a Visa company, and I was about to explain that you have the Visa problem. The Visa problem is you have to get a lot of restaurants to accept the card, or no one's going to use it. On the other hand, you have to have a lot of people carrying the card, or the restaurant's not going to sign up for it, right? So you got the dealerships. That's easy. You know where they are, and you can call the manager. How did you get people to sign up? What was the first marketing effort you did to get your first real customer carrying the card?
Yeah. So, you know, I've been on a bunch of podcasts, I've been on TV a few times, going out, doing some, you know, traditional B2C marketing, working with some influencers, you know, all the stuff. And we also, and really it's, you know, I think like what it comes down to is the value prop is pretty simple, right? People are spending the money anyway. The prices are going up. Why not get the points? So it's pretty intuitive for a lot of people. And, you know, people understand credit cards and credit card rewards. They understand that they have these large recurring payments that they are not traditionally getting rewards for. And they say, hey, I have this bill. They see their month, you know, they see their finances every month. And they're saying, hey, I'm spending, you know, $1,000 a month, you know, some a little bit more, some a little bit less, but I'm spending that and I'm not getting rewards. Why am I getting rewarded for my cup of coffee, which is, you know, a few bucks instead of these large recurring payments? And that's really what we're going after, right? And so we want to make sure that people understand that, hey, I'm spending this money, I might as well optimize my points. And, you know, the point gaining industry has become kind of like a industry within itself, right? And so we want to make sure that people understand that. You know, we also have done marketing with our dealer partners as well. And so we can do more localized marketing. So we're working with Bud Glary, who's a dealership up in Washington State, right? So we can go and market to all of their customers. And the key is you don't have to purchase your car that day to sign up for the card. If you have, you know, if you have 10% left on your loan or 90% left on your loan or 100% left on your loan or lease, we can start giving you points. So, you know, the whole key is that is getting the people where they are. And then we have a lot of, you know, new products that we're going to be coming out with as well, which I think will be really exciting on the consumer end and on the dealer end.
All right. Remember that jacket you told me about that you can go into the dealership and get with points? How many points does a jacket like that cost? A $100 nice jacket.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's a cent a point for the dealership, which is, you know, okay, credit card industry standard. Yeah, okay. And then you know, these are things that also might change, might have different promotions, like, you know, how different credit cards do that. But as it stands, that's our standard. But you know, there might be different benefits for different consumers coming out. So you know, I definitely wait and see, and I can come back on when we announce our next products.
Yes, definitely. We'd love to watch the company grow. So I heard you say that you were going to do a Series A. Does that mean that you've bootstrapped entirely up until now with your own funds?
No, we've raised $7 million seed round.
Oh, okay. Very impressive. Where'd that come from? How long did that take? And was it traditional VC or angels? Or tell us the breakdown of that $7 million.
Some traditional VCs, Soma Capital, but then also people in the auto industry, right? I think, especially kind of, you know, for pre-launch companies, you know, I think it had a lot of good effects for people within the auto industry to come on as investors. And so, you know, we got some pretty large checks from people within the auto world to go in, and they, you know, they saw the value of this both on the consumer end and on the dealership side. And so, as we went and worked on, as I went and raised money, I got introduced to two people who own dealerships. They're like, I love this idea. I want to come in and invest. And so, you know, a lot of people in the auto world, and there's a lot of kind of things in tangential to auto as well, which we got investors from. So, you know, some VCs as well as, you know, some family offices within the auto world.
All right. Very impressive. That is impressive. So yeah. How big is the company now? How many employees or,
We have seven employees. We have, seven employees who I'm incredibly happy with. So it's been really great. And, you know, going and building something, really being in the trenches with, you know, the people who you're working with is really great. And, we make sure, even though we are a remote company, we actually just had our team retreat. So making sure we're getting together quarterly and making sure we're going and, you know, focusing on our goals and our OKRs, which really make sure that we get to, our thresholds and really kind of prove out all of our distribution models and all of that. And that's where we are in this early stage. And I'm really happy with how the progress has been going as well. Yeah.
So you just had your first company retreat. You said, did you have employees that you were meeting for the very first time at that retreat that you had actually never met before?
In person. Yeah. In person. And you know, what I like is that everyone is really like a lot of people are credit card or auto enthusiasts as well. And so it's a really good to kind of get good real life feedback. But yeah, there were two people on the retreat who I'd never actually met in person. So it's really good to make sure everyone gets together and everyone gets FaceTime because good communication makes companies, bad communication can be a company killer. So we want to make sure that we are communicating, and sometimes with remote that can be an issue, but we want to make sure that is not an issue for us. And so it's good to get people knowing each other and making sure people get that FaceTime and kind of go and build those relationships and bonds.
Yeah, I totally agree. I have two employees that I've never met that have worked for me for 3 years each, and I still have not met them.
Yeah. So, well, you should have a company retreat. You know, maybe we can combine retreats and we can talk about school for startup and Fasten. Yeah, and you know, just one other thing I do just want to bring up too is that, like, you know, in the credit card world, right? Like, there's a lot of news about the higher end cards, right? Like the you know, Citi came out with a card, and Chase is raising their prices, as is Amex, right? But our key too is just we want to make sure that, you know, people understand that, you know, we are a zero fee card for people, and that's really, you know, not really focusing on as like we're focusing on all customers, but we want to make sure that this is as, you know, accessible of a card product for everyone around the country. So I just want to make sure we highlight that too.
Yes, good point. Good point. Well, Jacob, it's a really cool idea. I had never thought of this, and I'm really impressed with how far you have gone. So what is your goal personally? Are you going to run this the rest of your life? Are you going to run it for 5 years and sell it like the baby?
Yeah, I'm definitely not selling the baby, I mean, you never know, right? I think everyone wants to go and grow their company, but it takes a lot of really hard work to get there and a lot of commitment. We never see, we're not really sure where we'll end up, but I think we'll end up really just affecting the lives of Americans and dealers all over the country by helping them go and save money. And, you know, what the future holds for us, it's still to be seen, but maybe an IPO, maybe a sale, but success is what's in our future.
Ooh, I love that attitude. Fantastic. Jacob, congratulations on a great run, and we would love to have you back. How do we find out more? Sign up for the card, get in touch with you, all that, please.
Yeah, great. So you can sign up at fastencard.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn, Jacob Zach, Z-A-C-H-S. I am the only Jacob Zach in the world that I'm pretty easy to find. And you go and sign up for the card. It's really... Really good, would help us out, and would love to have, you know, more cardholders and get more feedback and all of that stuff. So, we're here to help reward you on the money you're spending already.
Fantastic. I love it. Jacob, well done, and we would love to have you back. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Talk to you later.
And we will be right back.
talk and no action on climate change? Introducing The Real Environmentalists, the bold new book by Jim Beach. It's not about activists, politicians, or professors. It's about the entrepreneurs, real risk takers, building cleaner, smarter solutions, not for applause, but for profit. The entrepreneurs in the book aren't giving speeches. They're in labs, factories, and offices, cleaning the past and building clean products for the future. The Real Environmentalists is available now because the people saving the planet aren't the ones you think. Go to Amazon and search for Real Environmentalist. Thank you.
And welcome back to School for Startups Radio again. Thank you so much for being with us today. We only have one guest today, and he is a superstar. His name is Michael Houlihan. I bet almost every one of our listeners has consumed one of his products, and I hope that you will consume some of his educational products coming up soon. Michael and his wife, Bonnie, founded Barefoot Wine, which is now the number one wine company in the world. Unbelievably, it's just an incredible success story. He eventually sold that company, and now he is dedicated to writing. He has three books out, one called The Entrepreneurial Culture, 23 Ways to Engage and Empower Your People. He also is the author of The Barefoot Spirit, How Hardship, Hustle, and Heart Built America's Number One Wine Brand, and then also Ready, Aim, Captivate, Put Magic in Your Message and Fortune in Your Future. He has won so many awards that I could go on for the entire interview time telling you about them, but he has won awards for his activities in terms of giving back. The Surfrider Foundation gave them the Wave Maker Award. He is a New York Times bestselling author. He has won growth awards. He has won Wine Spectator awards. He has won, been in Success magazine. He's a distinguished alumni from his university. The County of Los Angeles gave him an award for dedicated service and numerous other contributions. And most importantly now, he's giving back to you entrepreneurs and people who want to be an entrepreneur. He has a new website called BarefootSpiritGPS.com, which has an amazing online webinar series that we're going to talk about. Michael, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Jim.
I am an avid consumer of Barefoot wines. It is our weekday wine around the house. That's what you intended, isn't it? Isn't it designed to be an everyday wine? Tell us a little bit about your past.
Well, when we started Barefoot Wine, we realized that America didn't have an everyday house wine, like a Tuesday night wine. They had a lot of Saturday night wines, and they had a lot of wine snobs, and there was a lot of wine speak. Most of it was in French. And, of course, we were Americans, and we knew nothing about the wine industry. So we approached it from the consumer standpoint. We said, okay, who is consuming the most wine in America? And that question really broke down to who's buying the most. And the answer was a 37-year-old mom with 2.5 kids pushing a grocery cart down an aisle in the supermarket wine store shops. And so that represented like most of the states in the United States had some kind of wine sales at retail that were not controlled by the government. So we said, how are we going to approach this market of moms, basically? And so we started asking them what they wanted, and they said, well, we want consistency. And we were shocked because that was exactly the opposite of the old vintage business where the wine tastes different every year based upon how much rain fell or, you know, if the elephants got loose in the vineyard or whatever happened. And so we said, how are we going to make wines that taste the same from year to year? And we were able to get a wonderful winemaker, Jennifer Wall, who knew exactly how to do that. And she had a background in pre-med. So her view of wine was beyond enology, which is winemaking, but was actually into, you know, biochemistry. And so she was looking at it. She was saying, we can make these wines taste the same if we blend them from year to year for a consistent taste. And so that's what we did. And that was the concept behind Barefoot Wine. But also, we had to make sure that it was at the price you wanted to pay. And so that was the velocity price point that's very affordable to everybody. So then it turned out that, you know, not only she liked it, but everybody started to like it because all of a sudden wine became accessible in the United States. It became at a price that everybody could afford. What we didn't realize is that we had to sell 200,000 cases here just to break even.
That's a lot of wine. That is a lot of wine. You don't even put the year on the bottles. Am I correct? That's very
correct.
Different in the wine industry.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, in the first 4 or 5 years, it's hard for us to convince the supermarket and box store buyers that it was okay to sell wine that was non-vintage. And, of course, the way you gain permission in the business world is you make money at it. And then they say, oh, I see. I'm missing the boat over here. There's a market for this. And so they began to realize that there was a market for non-vintage wine. And you do see a lot of that today, but I think Barefoot was probably the pioneer.
Didn't you entirely bootstrap this company and start in, I believe, a laundry room?
Well, we like to say that we were Barefoot because we couldn't afford boots to bootstrap ourselves.
I love it.
We were so broke we couldn't afford a washer and dryer. Bonnie and I had just moved in with each other after being together for about a year, and we moved into a ranch house out in the Sonoma County foothills. And boy, it was cold when the wind blew, the candles moved, and when it rained, you knew it. There was drops inside the house, and it was thin-walled. And that's where we lived, and we didn't have a washer and a dryer. We would just take our clothes and put them in the trunk of our car and drive them over to our friend's house and wash them over there. But because we didn't have a washer and a dryer, we had this room that used to be a porch that the cowboys who had the house before us had boarded up and turned into a room. So we thought, gee, this is perfect. We'll just use this for our first office. So we didn't have enough money for a desk, so we went out to the barn and we got a door and we put it on a couple of sawhorses. And that was our first desk. So, yes, we were very resourceful.
And what lessons of bootstrapping can you share with us? How did you make it work, Michael? What are some of the things that allowed you to prosper when you had absolutely no money and or desk, no desk even?
Well, you know, I think what made us prosper more than anything was that we discovered early and often what we call strategic allies. Now, these are people who are going to benefit if you grow. So when you're a startup, probably the first thing you need to do is to take a look around and say, now, who benefits if I grow? Maybe there's a key supplier that supplies you with some part that you need for your product. In our case, it was glass. We went to the glass company and we said, listen, we're selling inexpensive wine. We're certainly going to sell a whole lot more glass than the expensive wines. So if we benefit, you benefit. So what do we have to do? How long do we have to work with you? What kind of proof do you need to know that we care about you and we see you as a strategic ally and we want to have extended credit and higher limits on that credit? And so we worked with them. We met with them like every quarter, every 3 months. We'd sit down with our biggest suppliers. And we'd say, here's where we are. Here's our challenges. You know what? If we had the money, we could expand into this market, but we don't have the money. Is there any way you guys can help us? And they would say, well, you know, we can give you extended credit for some of the parts that you need to do that. And so that was one thing we did. Another thing we did was we realized that our customer was really made up of people who had interests that were other than wine, it was other than groceries. They were interested in maybe cleaning up a creek behind their house or what their kids were going to do after school. They were concerned with a new library or this or that or trying to save a lake or clean up a stream or save a forest. So what we did is we began to discover these groups and support them. We would donate wine to them and we would speak at their gatherings and we would take their message into the stores with little tags on our product. So now the members of nonprofits had a social reason to see us succeed because they saw us as supporting them and their goals. So Those are two examples of strategic alliances that we recommend to people to think about when they're starting their company. You know, use your suppliers as bankers. Use your customers as bankers.
That is great advice, Michael. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. After 20 years, you sold the business. I've sold a business. I cried as I drove home, Michael, because I felt like I was selling one of my children. Now that I have four children, I'll gladly just give one away because there's too many in the house. Did you cry? Were you ecstatic beyond words to get rid of the burden? What was your emotional state when you sold your life's work?
Well, you know, it was definitely mixed emotions. You know, there's part of me that was very happy and relieved, and that was because whenever you build something, you know, if you are a true entrepreneur and not just a solo entrepreneur and not just a single service provider, but you're a true entrepreneur, what you're doing is you're actually building a brand. Yes, you're in business, but the business has a brand name, or your product has a brand name, or your service has a brand name. Well, it is that name that is valuable to an acquirer. And in order for that brand name to become big enough to become an acquisition target, a lot of people say, oh, my business isn't for sale. Well, of course it isn't. It isn't big enough. Nobody would buy it anyway. You know, that's a very convenient thing to say. So the idea is the first thing you have to do, we tell startups, is go out to lunch with a broker that sells businesses and find out what the metrics are for your type of business. How big do you have to be? What market share do you need? How many dollars a year do you have to show? All those things. And then you know what it is that you have to do. In our case, it was 500,000 cases a year before anybody would look at us. So that's one thing. I was very relieved to have hit the mark. We actually hit closer to 600,000, and we were getting, you know, overtures by the largest wine companies around because they said, you know, we'd better buy it before our competitor buys it. So that was good. The painful part was that I knew that I was going to have to stop my relationships with so many wonderful people that I had been working with over the years. And they had become real friends and family to me. And that was really tough. You know, I really had a feeling of loss, and I went through a period of grief, actually, thinking, you know, I really miss going to work and working with those people and seeing their happy faces and their excited enthusiasm and listening to their solutions, outrageous solutions, incredible problems. And that's what I really missed. But today, I'm very happy that we have taken that experience and parlayed it into what we're doing now.
Well, let's talk about that. And I agree with you. Leaving the people is truly the hard part. But now you have moved on and you're taking these years of knowledge and you're helping entrepreneurs with barefootspiritgps.com. Tell us what the website is all about and what you're dedicated to doing with it.
Okay, so the Barefoot Spirit is really the spirit that's behind the Barefoot brand. So it's a spirit that is beyond wine. It's a spirit that has to do with how you hire people, how you incentivize people, how you compensate people, how you treat people, how you get your suppliers to extend credit to you, how you get your buyers to buy in larger and larger amounts. So it has a lot to do with what we say, putting yourself in the other guy's shoes, or as your grandma used to say, the golden rule. But, you know, you hear that a term is overused, but when you really break it down and get granular and say, you know, here's an example. If you can't pay your bill and you know you can't pay your bill and you know it 30 days out, call your vendor and say, you know, 30 days from now I can't pay my bill, but guess what? I got three checks coming in. They're earmarked for you. My account will be current within another 60 days. When you say that to your vendor, he says, wow, you're the kind of business I want to do business with. You've got empathy for me. You understand my concern. I'm so glad you called me in advance. Most of the time, I have to run people down, and that's unnerving. So this is the kind of thing that the GPS is about. We call it guiding principles for success. So it's like the GPS system in your car that stands for the global positioning satellite. Well, wouldn't it be great if you could just put an address into your business and it would take you there like your car? And that's pretty much what this does. This is a set of 20 guiding principles that you can hold up against any decision that you're making in business and say, how does this play out? How does this compare? These principles are principles that I know make sense. I know they're proven. I know this is the right way to go. Here's a choice. What road do I take on this choice? And it allows you to have these standards, and the standards work like a compass or a GPS system, and they keep you on course. So that's what we're all about today. And, you know, we've spoken to 40 universities that teach entrepreneurship, and we've been talking about the guiding principles for success. And, you know, many of these principles are old-fashioned principles, but they've been lost in the technological age where everybody is texting each other and they forget, gee, you know, it's really based on personal relationships after all. You know, how do I come off personally? Can I start a conversation with a stranger? Do I know how to communicate with people in real time? So, I mean, these are the kinds of things that we talk about, and we help people learn them.
Can you give me an example of one of the guiding principles, one of the things, maybe one that's the most forgotten or something, one of them that jumps out to you, Michael?
Well, I think that pay for performance is a really good old-fashioned principle. You don't want to, when you start your business, you're an entrepreneur, you really can't afford to hire people who are not entrepreneurs. And so we see this with clients time and time again. They pay people whether or not they produce, and they pay people solely based on the time that they put in. So their people say things like, I was there, pay me. Or they say, I'm busy, or I'll keep myself busy, or I have enough to keep myself busy. They don't talk about, I've got to achieve this production or what have you. Now, it's really hard to pay people who normally get paid by the hour on some kind of a percentage of profit growth and sales. But it is possible, for instance, in our case, what we did is we took our 401k matching funds. It happened every quarter, and I recommend that no bonus go over a quarter because people won't remember it. Annual bonuses don't work because if they achieve the annual bonus by July, they're gonna stop working for the rest of the year. If they have a bad first 3 or 4 months, they're going to be discouraged. But if you do it on a quarterly basis, what we did is we said, okay, we can match as a corporation your 401k deposit, either 50% of what you put in, 100% of what you put in, or 150% of what you put in based upon the company's sales growth and profitability. So now you're putting everybody out on the same limb with you. And that is, you're not going to make it if sales don't happen. And if people talk a lot today about how to establish a company culture of entrepreneurship, well, it's really simple. It's based on sales. The money comes from the customer. The more your employee knows that, and the more that they are paid in relationship to that, then the more they're going to cooperate with your other employees as a team to achieve those goals.
And you have a new 4-part webinar series that you're doing. Can you tell us about that? I believe the first one is called Starters for Startups. Tell us about it, Michael.
Okay, so it is a 4-part series, and it's the four what we consider to be, now in retrospect, like we're Monday morning quarterbacks, right? So we did it. We actually did it. And then we look back and we said, now what did we do right here? And it wasn't that we were so brilliant because we made a lot of mistakes. So what we did right, we had to synthesize out of everything that we did. And so what we now teach is Starters for Startups, which basically takes a person who is aspiring or their startup or their growth phase. And it says, let's take a look at this. Why are you in business in the first place? How much time are you really going to spend in business? Do you know what the metrics are that you have to achieve before somebody's going to acquire you? Are you looking for a monetization event, or do you just want to get old throwing pizza? So that's Starters for Startups. A lot of people haven't thought of that stuff, and it really helps them because it allows them to lay out a game plan, a strategy. Then the next one is called cash flow management. This is key. You've got to pay your bills. Where does the cash come from? So do you just borrow money? Do you just keep going back to your financiers for a second or third round, and then you wind up losing control of your company? Do you just burn up all your investment capital before you achieve cash flow? Or do you actually achieve cash flow? And that has a lot to do with how you grow and, you know, how fast you grow and what services are required to substantiate and to validate your growth. And so we talk a lot about cash flow management. And, of course, the goal in cash flow management is to be resourceful. The more resourceful you are, the less cash you need. Then the next big module that we consider to be a killer for most business is personnel management, which is how do you treat your people? You know, why are they working for you? You know, what do they expect? How can you get them to cooperate in your business? Like, for instance, do you treat them on a need-to-know basis or do you treat them on a know-the-need basis? If you're treating them on a know-the-need basis, you're saying, listen, guys, we got this problem in the marketplace. Any ideas? And if they come up with ideas and you use them, it just welds them all together into a team, and they're so happy to work for you. So that's an example of personnel management. And then the third discipline that we consider to be core discipline for entrepreneurship is...
Michael? I want to interrupt for just a second. I've never heard the know the need versus need to know. That is great. I wanted to highlight that for our listeners. I'm sitting here taking notes and I wrote that down and circled it, Michael. I love that. Letting your employees know what's going on and how they're a part of it. That's a fantastic one. We'll tweet that one out. All right. I think we're ready for module four. What's module four about?
And module four is what is overlooked the most by startups, which is distribution management. Typically, they have a product or a service, they fall in love with it. They put it up on their screen and everybody gathers around. You know, their team likes it. You know, their mom likes it. The neighbor next door likes it. Everybody's sure that that's a killer app or a killer product or a killer service. And they're just going to go to market with it and that's the end of it. Well, that's not the end of it. That's the beginning of it, because the market really doesn't care about how great your idea is. What they care about is, for instance, what is the strategic advantage that I get if I sell your product? You know, how does it help my company? I'm a distributor. I sell a lot of different products like yours. How does yours help me? The retailer might say, I'm not going to put it into my retail store, or I'm not going to put it on my website unless you can show me that it's sold before. Show me that this moves quickly, because I can't handle this kind of inventory problem. I'm paying rent on my shelf space and security and lights and personnel, and so I've got to turn things rather quickly. So basically what distribution management is about is to understand everybody in the distribution chain. It's different for every business. And what is their motive? What do they want out of you? And it isn't how great your product is. It isn't, you know, the benefits and the features of your product. It has to do with what they want. So once again, putting yourself in the other guy's shoes.
Great, great stuff. And how can we take this series and sign up for the entire webinar series, Michael?
They should go to barefootspiritgps.com.
All right.
It's barefoot, like barefoot, your foot, and spirit, like the spirit in the sky, barefoot spirit, GPS, like mobile positioning satellite. .com, barefootspiritgps.com. We'd love to see you. And we'd love to work with you.
We are out of time for today, but back tomorrow. Be safe, take care, and go make $1 million by now.